Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional children's book illustrators. We've all illustrated a lot of books. I have no idea how many.
Hundreds.
Yeah. And we've all taught at the university. And I don't like saying the same thing every time, but that's okay.
I don't know why you have a hang up there with that.
it's an intro. It's supposed to be the same.
I know.
If you ever watch a show on Netflix, they don't change it up every week.
But they should.
Each week we're going to tackle a subject relating to illustration from our three perspectives. Sometimes we're going to agree. Well, let's face it. Every time we're basically going to agree. Sometimes we're going to argue, but every time you are going to learn something brand spanking new.
Maybe we should change that line. So it should just say each week we tackle a subject related to illustration.
Each week.
Just leave it at that.
Each week we agree on whatever the other person says.
We have disagreed, though.
No, we have.
To be fair, plenty of times. Okay. So before we get into today's topic, I just want to know how everything's going with your projects. Will, what's the latest with you?
Everything's a check. Everything's a go.
What are you working on right now?
Wow. That was really optimistic. Everything is good to go. Green light over here.
Pulling the trigger.
Taking the bull by the horns.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing about it is that Jake is, you know, he's superhuman when he does like all these different projects. And I have this slight inferiority complex when he's like, so anyway, on my way back from the moon, I illustrated 3 more books and I'm still a good family man during all that. My kids love me and blah, blah, blah. So here's the thing. I'm working on the painting, color, and light class still working on my children.
Okay.
But that class is gargantuan and mm-hmm. I'm going to be working on it for a while. So you might hear my update. Like I'm still working on this class, but the cool thing is, I love working on classes and I love having them. I love having them to the point where I can look back and go, you know, that was 5 months of my life. Like as the children's book class took me 5 months to write mm-hmm. or 2 months to write the creative composition, or in this case, the painting, color, and light class. I'm going back and putting a lot more into it than I did the first time.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, I love it. And I'm working on it and it's taken a while, but it's really satisfying.
Cool. Good. What about you, Lee?
I am going into my last week of my basic painting class and it's just amazing to see how far people come from week 1 to week 10. It's always shocking and it's always so satisfying. So we're right at the tail end of that. I just finished a critique. Their second to last critique. So next week's the last week. And then I started on a bunch of cool projects. I'm doing a big series of book covers for my agent because I'm going to kind of move into that genre. Because if you guys, I'm sure we've talked about it before, but children's books take such a long time. There's big waiting periods and just the whole thing is just long. And so we are talking about other kind of supplemental illustration jobs that I want to start getting. And so I'm going to be doing some licensing stuff, some more patterns and things for like wrapping paper and all that. I'd love that kind of stuff and design work. And then I'm doing a whole series of book covers based on classic novels. So I started this week with Lord of the Flies and it was so fun.
I love it. That's such a cool idea. And who asked you to do that?
It's just me and my agent kind of brainstorming here. I'm going to text you guys my first image comp while we're talking right now. It's just so we're going to be doing one cover per week and just messing around, trying to figure out how to get some of these, you know, these really well-known stories that are not cliche, but they're just such a part of the fabric of literature that we've seen mm-hmm. them so much. That how do you bring something fresh to them? You know, like Lord of the Flies is the first one. I was going to send you that. Where'd it go?
That's so cool. I like the fact that you're just taking this on yourself to do it. Yeah. It's not an assignment. It's not a job that's come through. It's just like you seeing something you want to do and doing it.
He's moving with the ball.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. It's so fun because you can just kind of really, you can really get in there and play like, how do I interpret this kind of subject matter? You know, it's a little bit older than the kid lit market, which I typically illustrate for. So where do I go with that? I mean, I'm still kind of figuring that stuff out. It's mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, I'm working on coloring my Inktober poster illustration that I did for Inktober, which is 31 different characters. And I am just having the hardest time getting the right colors to work together for it to not to be like so monochromatic, but also not be too colorful. You know what I mean? So that's like, it's always a challenge. I had a hard time with doing this last year with my last year's Inktober thing. Oh, your image just came in. That looks cool.
I got it. Just a little comp action.
Yeah, I like that. So working on that, and then I'm also working on the Inktober handbook, which is a guide to doing Inktober, a guide to inking, and just working on some notes that I've gotten from my editors for that and doing some illustrations. So that's what's on my plate right now.
Bunch of busy dudes.
Busy dudes. All right. Should we get into today's topic?
Yeah, but first let me say that is a really cool image.
Thanks, man. It's just a comp right now, so I still got some tweaking to do, but it's just fun.
Okay.
Can we put this on our show notes or on the blog for this post, or is it secret?
No, I'll put this one on there, the comp on there, and then I should be done with the finished illustration probably tomorrow, so I'll put that on there too.
Okay, cool. Right on. So today what I want to talk about was the life cycle of a children's book, and some of this applies to any book. But because we're illustrators and we do a lot of children's book stuff, I thought it'd be cool to just talk about where a book starts, what it does in its lifetime, how a book ends, all the hands that touch it, and basically like unwrap that, because there's layers and layers and it's an onion skin of a topic. So I thought we'd just go chronologically, and I'd throw out each stage and get your guys' feedback on it, and we'll move from there. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay. So there's actually two different branches we could go down, but I'm going to go down. One branch is a author-illustrator combo. The other branch is an illustrator who is an author, or an author who is an illustrator. And we're going to leave that one aside because it's a little more streamlined, and we're going to do the author illustrator combo where it's two people working together, and how that book gets made, how it gets run through the publishing industry. We're not going to talk about like self-publishing. We're talking about like the publishing world as it works right now. Okay. So the first thing first is after a writer, an author has gone through all their drafts and figured out the story that they want to tell. Typically what they do is they submit their idea for a book, and it's usually in manuscript form. And a manuscript is it's the book just written out. There usually isn't illustration notes. There might be an illustration note, but usually it's just the words that are being read in the book. They submit that manuscript to her agent, and the agent reads through that manuscript and decides whether or not they think they can sell this book, you know, get a publishing deal for this. And sometimes at this stage, the author will get notes from the agent. The agent might say, because agents, if it's a good agent, they know what's going on in the publishing world, and they know what's selling right now and what isn't selling right now. So they might say, you know what, change your character from a boy to a girl, because I know I could sell a book about a girl right now. There's just too many boy books in the market. Or they might say, you know what, instead of kids, have it be animals. And you could still do the same story, but instead of people, we'll do animals. You know, that's the kind of notes that maybe your agent will have. And once that sort of works out and is good and everybody's happy, then the agent moves on to the next stage where they start shopping it around and sending it to publishers. But so far, do you guys have any like digressions on that or additions to that stage?
Sort of.
Okay. Are you guys here? Are you guys listening?
No, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. So what do you say? Do you chase a market? I mean, maybe this isn't the right talk for this, so that's why I'm kind of hesitant to bring it up. But your agent says, you know, penguins are really hot this year. Let's do penguins. All your characters have to be penguins. Do you change it because that's what's hot? Do you chase the hot item, or do you write the story you want to write and just not listen to your agent? I mean, you shouldn't not listen to your agent, but how do you,
right?
You know, what do you do there?
Here's what I think you do. And Will can correct me if I'm wrong, but if you really, really do believe in your story, you just tell your agent, no, this is how it is. And I want you to try, just take it out there and try. And then your agent gets to take it out and come back and say, you know what, you were right. Somebody did want it. Or they can say, told you so.
Yeah, it was penguins.
Nobody won. The other thing, though, is if you don't care, or if you, you know, if it's not something that close to you, you could say, okay, you're right. Penguins would be fine for this. Let's just switch it to penguins, and you adjust the story to do penguins. So,
but I'm new. I just got an agent. Mm-hmm. Am I really going to tell my agent no?
Yeah, first job out of the gate.
You want to be easy to work with. I don't know. that really does come down to who you are as a person. And I know for me, I have usually deferred to people who have more knowledge and experience than me. So if my agent is like, you know what, I've got a really good feeling that this isn't going to sell and maybe you should do it this way, then I'll defer to that. And there's been a couple of times where I haven't deferred and I said, no, let's still stick with it this way. And she was right. It wasn't going to work.
All right. So pick your battles.
All right. So next, the agent takes it to the publishers. She's going to know who it's good for, who it isn't. She might decide to show it to some publishers just because she's got a relationship with them and they would be upset if they found out that, even if she knew that it wasn't going to work for that publisher, it's still like a professional courtesy to like just show them, hey, this is what my client's working on and you've worked with this person in the past or you might like them, but I just want you to know what we're doing. You know, what projects we have out there. But more often than not, they're going to have a list of go-to editors to talk to. And that's typically who they first talk to about it is the editor level. The publisher level might want to get on board too if it's a really good, big idea. But typically it's the editor who then takes the idea, they review it, and they take it to the publisher, take it to their peers, other editors at the publishing house, and bounce it around and see what everybody thinks, if this is like a book that this house wants to publish. They'll talk to the marketing staff. They'll talk to the art director. They'll talk to the people who run the schedule. They'll check with the publishing schedule to see if something like this would fit in a fall or a a winter or a spring schedule, and they'll decide, you know, if everything adds up and it's like, yeah, we could fit this book in, they'll come back with an offer.
You know, something that I would love to point out right now, and that is a lot of times this is happening and you don't ever know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Your manuscript, mm-hmm. your book idea, your book dummy goes to, it's hitting all these desks. It's going into meetings. And sometimes they decide, we're going to pass on this. We're not going to publish it. We're not going to move any further. And you could be at home thinking, nobody likes my stuff. I'm never going to make it as an author. Meanwhile, they're spending man hours deciding whether or not they're actually going to take this all the way. And sometimes you have those near misses and never know.
I had Victoria Jameson come in. You guys know who she is?
Mm-mm.
She did Roller Girl. She won one of the ALA awards last year.
I met her here in Provo once.
Yeah, she's super, super sweet. She's an author illustrator now, but she comes from the publishing world. She worked at one of the main publishers. I can't remember which one, Viking or whatever. And she came in to speak in my class, and she had just transitioned to being an illustrator. So she came in, and she was it was a book illustration class, and she was going to talk about just the publishing side of stuff. So she had this wonderful slideshow that she started, that she showed, that just kind of walked people through this process that we're talking about on today's show. And by the time she got done, I was actually terrified. I left with like all this anxiety, because I could see how many hands these things go through. Like, I mean, there's like 100 people deciding on this thing before I ever get this email that says, "Hey, you interested in doing this thing?" I thought, oh my gosh, I'm never going to work again. It's almost like winning the lottery is what it almost seemed like, because it goes through so much. Now everyone's going to be scared after me saying
that. I think it's actually that you don't know about a lot of the near misses, because it would drive you crazy. I mean, if you knew every single time your artwork was being considered for a job and you didn't get it.
My manuscript was in acquisitions at one of the publishing houses on the 8th of November, and I still don't know. So it's a lot of anxiety when you do know that stuff is going through the mix.
Right. Well, and the other thing too is you have to think about, if they're going to make an offer on a book, the amount of money that you're going to see as a creator of the book is just a percentage of the amount of money that they're going to invest in this book, because it's the editor's time, it's the art director's time, it's the actual paying for the printing of the book, it's holding up the press for however long that this book is going to be on it. You know, it's the marketing materials and the marketing department that are going to invest time in it. And so that's why it has to go through all these hands, because everybody has budgets, every department has a budget, and they need to know if this is worth the amount of money and time that they're going to put into it. So, I think it is scary and it is daunting, but it's also, you don't want to go in with blinders on completely. You kind of want to know what you're in for, and knowing that, you know, you might also know, it might also inspire you, like how you approach things, how you talk to people, just having that understanding of what's going on behind the scenes.
Let me ask you guys a hypothetical question. If just based on that, like all the risk and the uncertainty and all that stuff that comes with this life that we've chosen, if you could go back in time and there was basically staff illustrators, and say we were hired by the publishing company, like all three of us are on staff at Simon and Schuster or whatever, and we get whatever our salary is per year, and you just like are given an allotment of books, and you come to work every day and you work on these books, you know, day in, day out, would you trade that kind of a lifestyle for what we have now?
I hope I wouldn't.
I wouldn't. I sort of had that lifestyle when I worked in an animation studio.
So it didn't matter that it was animation versus publishing for you. It was kind of the lifestyle that comes with that in terms of your relationship to your employer and all that.
Yeah. And I will say I did love it. I loved it while I was working there. I loved the environment. I loved the people that I worked with. I loved the projects I was working on, even though I complain sometimes about, you know, there's a lot of redundancy and mundaneness to some of the animation work that I was doing, because I'd be stuck on a scene for months working on the same background design, you know.
Right.
But ultimately I am happier having the more independent career now.
If you ask my wife, no, it's funny. Like, we used to get into these, I wouldn't call them arguments so much, but they were lively discussions. And she used to say, "I wish you had a regular job." It didn't sound exactly like that.
Hold on one second. While you're explaining this, Jake, can you add some something to make this a little bit more interesting, like some music?
Keep going,
Will.
I'm like, gosh, like, what are you doing? So, anyway, as I was, you guys,
our sound effects are loud.
I'll turn it off.
We just got some. Sorry. We just got some new toys, and so.
So she, you asked her today. She says, "Man, I'm really glad you didn't, because for a long time she was pushing me to get a master's degree, to get a real job. To I'm tired of the gaps between checks. I'm tired of not knowing how much we're gonna have. I'm tired, also tired of getting a big check and not being able to spend some of it because we're not sure how, you know, the workload is going to go in the future. But now she's come full circle and she says, I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing. You know, we're doing better than we were before, but it's, I can see how, you know, it's led to your success to be able to, you know, be creative and work on projects and, be fulfilled as an artist. And that, you know, I've lived long enough to see a lot of people with those regular jobs, go through those cycles are probably, bigger waves, right? Where's
there's a different cadence,
but the freelancers is it bigger ups and downs. So you kind of get used to it, over time. But, boy, when you get a layoff, when you think you have a regular gig, a really solid gig,
right?
You know, so there's that aspect. But I think going back to the original question, I think if you looked at the children's book market in general as a whole, I think you would take a lot of creativity out of the market by having everyone.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just have a house style. Yeah. All right. So back to what we're actually supposed to be talking about.
We're supposed to be talking about wherever the wind blows us.
Kidding.
This was somehow loosely related. I can't remember.
I appreciate
it. Oh, no. We were talking about how random it is and how many kind of stages the manuscript originally has to go through to even get the green light. Mm-hmm. So,
right. So once the light is greened, once you get the green,
the greening of the light,
the weirdest way to say that. Once you get the green light, an offer is made. And if you're in a good, position, if you're getting offers from several different editors, because that means you could get a bidding war, and if they really want it, they might have room in their budget to go up even more and say, okay, well, if they're going to pay that, we'd rather have it and we'll pay this. So that's a good position to be in. But more often than not, the right house finds it and makes the right offer and you accept it. The author accepts it. Now it's time to find an illustrator. And I think before the offer is ever made, to the author, they have a short list of illustrators they'd want to work with, right? And so this is when you're a working illustrator, this is where you come into the picture. And what happens is your agent, or if you're not an agent, or if you don't have an agent, you'll get an email that basically says, are you interested in working on this book? Here's the manuscript. Read it through and get back to us. And so you read it through it and you see, is this something that I want to spend the next several months on? Something that I want my name attached to? Does it have visuals that I want to draw? Is it aligned with my brand? You know, those are the kind of questions that you're asking yourself and you're looking at it. And then also, once you decide that, yes, you do want to do it, are they going to pay enough? And so if you decide, yes, you want to take it on, you get back to them, you say, yeah, this is, you know, sign me up, but what, you know, what's the, make me an offer. And they'll come back with now an offer to the illustrator. And so not only that, also a loose schedule as well to see if you can fit it into your schedule. Any additions there from you guys?
That sounds
about right.
That sounds right. It's tough though to look forward that long when you start to get that you're saying like once it's gone through and they're asking you, okay, you want to do this, and then you're kind of looking forward. Is that what you're the point we're in?
Yeah. So now, basically, if you say yes to what that offer sounds like. Now it goes into the contract stage. So that's when you really like get to nail down your schedule. Yeah.
Well, that's what I wanted to just like highlight, the fact that you guys want to know your process inside and out. And most of the time, like when I would ask students, say, how long does it take you to finish a painting? They would think about the painting, but not think about the scanning and the sketches and the comps and all that stuff, and really understand how long some of these things take, because it can double or triple your time depending on how you work.
Yep. Correct.
Just a little side note.
Right. So yeah, at this point you should really be thinking about your schedule. If the money that's on the table is worth the amount of time that you're going to do as well. And if, you know, if everything feels good to you, looks good to you, makes sense, then you say yes. And then your agent and their contracts department start going back and forth on negotiating exactly like the finer points of it, exactly how much money, and getting that contract drafted. And there's other things in the contracts too, like what are the royalties that you're going to get? What percentage? Do you have rights to the artwork, or does the publisher keep the entire rights to the artwork? Usually you want to retain rights to be able to use it in your portfolio and to show it on your website and things like that. But you also want to shoot for retaining rights to the artwork, so that if this children's book takes off and they decide to make ancillary products like pajamas and mugs and calendars using your artwork, that you should be able to get a cut of that as well. So those are other things you want to look at in the contract. We should probably do an entire episode on that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It'd be really interesting to talk about. But once all that's squared away, you sign the contract. And once that contract is signed, typically you get a payment upon signing of the contract. And this payment is what's called an advance. We've talked a little bit about advances on here, but the advance is an advance on royalties. That's what it's short for. Advances. Short for this money that you would be getting from sales of the book, but you're getting it up front before the book's even sold. And this is a great idea because it protects the artists, it protects the creators, and it gives them some money up front to kind of see them through the creation of the thing that's getting made. And how it works is, let's say the advance is $20,000, right? You're going to be getting half of that advance upon signing of the contract. There's usually one of two options. One is a third upon signing, and then a third upon finishing, and then a third upon actual publication of the book. The other is half on signing the contract and half on delivering the final files. And that's more of my contracts have been that than the other one. And so once your advance is paid off after the book sells and you start, the royalties come in enough to pay off that advance, then you start making royalty, you get royalty checks after that. But that's kind of how that works. But that's later on in the life cycle of a book. But so now you got this, this check, you get to take it to the bank and deposit it right into your checking account. It's the best feeling ever.
It's true.
And you get to work.
You try to get to the bank before the late notices come.
Exactly. You get to pay off that furnace that you just had to replace.
How'd your furnace story go? Didn't we talk about the furnace last time?
Yeah, we did. The furnace is the brand new furnace. It's so nice, and the house has never been warmer. It's never been better. It's worth it. And I should say, we got the high efficiency one. We decided to pay the extra and get that, so now our monthly bill goes down too. So
keep telling yourself that.
Well, if we ever sell the house too, that's appealing to future home buyers, so they're not going to have as high a bill.
So
Jake has talked himself into the furnace.
Yeah, that's a funny man. You can go sideways on that. But going backwards just a little bit, one thing that is, since one of the things we like to do on this podcast is be real. The reality is when we say you get you know, you get a third or you get a half on signing of the contract. How long does it take by from the time that you sign the contract to you see that payment?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, wait, the payment actually comes to you?
So
the quickest it's ever come to me is a month.
Yeah, I was going to say a month to 2 months usually. And
we deal with the weird industry because most industries, like I just saw a link saying that the new Amazon warehouse is going to be in Nashville. Like we're used to the Amazon marketplace now where I order something, I get stuff in the same day now that I order it sometimes.
Right.
And somehow the publishing world just got stuck in like 1900. I think they horses bring my check.
Right.
Because it is so slow. I'm still waiting on one that I signed 2 months ago. And I mean, it's weird because you get that little rush of adrenaline when you send the check, or excuse me, send the contract in. And then 2 months later, I'm like looking at my watch.
Yep.
You know, so where's my check?
It speaks to the idea that you really have to be good with your money. And, you know, this was something that, again, my wife and I would struggle over, which is, you know, we just got this $10,000 check or $15,000 check or something or 20. And we can't spend it. Why can't we spend it? Because we're going to be waiting on contracts and other payments in the future. So.
Yeah. So that's what happens. Also in that contract too, it should outline the schedule of the book and the projected like production or publication date. And typically it is anywhere from a year to 2 years later from the signing of the contract. And the reason for that is once you start drawing and producing artwork for the book, once they have some artwork, they can start selling the book to bookstores, to distributors, to libraries and things like that. And usually what that is it's well in advance of when those books actually come to publication. So typically the budgets for some of these bookstores and libraries and things like that, what they're going to do is have a budget scheduled out for fall, for spring, for summer of the next year. And they want to know what is coming in those fall, spring, summer time periods and know what they need to buy and what's going to be hot and what's going to be the thing that everybody's going to want. So they're actually kind of playing, you know, kind of looking at a crystal ball. You know, what's the buzz on these creators who are making it? What's the buzz on this topic? You know, what's going to be relevant a year from now or 6 months from now, whenever this season comes around? So all of those sort of things are starting to happen as you start turning in finished files. And so production usually takes for you, usually it's like a 6 months or to a year. Sometimes it's 3 months after the contract is signed, depending on how tight the schedule is or how soon they want that book to come out. But I've had books that upon signing of the contract were due, the final files were due 9 months later, or I think even like a year later for some books as well. You guys have that same experience?
Yeah, it takes forever. All of it's long.
Mm-hmm. The reason for that, like, you know, if you sat down and really, if you were like able to put everything to the side and just focus on that book, you could probably draw, illustrate, you know, a children's book in 2 months. But there's back and forth. There's doing the sketches, submitting those, getting feedback on the sketches. There's doing tighter sketches, more refined stuff. There's doing like a finished illustration to show what your what the actual style is going to be like, and all this is happening in these early stages of production. And each time that you submit something back to your editor and your art director, they're also going to show maybe they're going to show the author if the author has a lot of clout, or they're going to show the art director, or they're going to show the marketing people, and they're going to come back with notes on what you're doing. Mostly, the marketing people have notes on the cover, because that's what people judge books by. And you shouldn't.
I was waiting for that.
Right. So that's basically, I guess, in a nutshell, typically you send in initial rough sketches. You get feedback. And usually from those initial rough sketches, once they're approved, then I do a final illustration and send that in to get approval on final art so that we're all on the same page with how this, the art style is actually going to look. And once that's approved, then I send in final sketches for the rest of the book. And once those are approved, then I start, I finish out the rest of the illustrations and turn in all of the files finished. And then there's notes on the final artwork and a couple of revision passes. And once that's all good to go, then they can start working with the book on their end. And there's a lot of work that they have to do as well. But do you guys have anything to add to that
section? Not really, but it sounds, I was just going to say, it sounds complicated, but it's, they're directing it. So you basically are just responding to emails, and it's not like you have to keep track of all that right. stuff.
Yeah, but it does highlight the fact that we really are working intensely with other people, and you have to get ready for that marketing email that says, hey, purple's the color this year, so can you lean it a little more purple? Yep. Or some kind of thing that has nothing to do with what you are wanting it to look like. And you have to kind of, again, pick your battles on, you know, how much you're going to push back on that. But you really do work back and forth with a lot of different departments and people. And so, you know, you're just part of it. You are part of a team, which is a lot different than being in a class where you're just making an image, you know.
I noticed right. that in my Bonaparte right. book, in the second one, they were like, let's leave out the devil character. You know, because it was like it wasn't a main character in the first one. But then in the second one, they're like, we don't need a devil in this one. So something happened in a meeting or something that I wasn't right. privy to, you know.
So then all that art's in their hands. And what they start to work on is formatting and laying out the book. The art director is going to go in and typeset everything. They're going to format all the pages to fit exactly the dimensions of what the book is going to be. They're just prepping everything for print. And at the same time, also, you're bugging them and saying, hey, or usually you're bugging your agent and said, okay, I've delivered everything. It's time for that second check. And so then they're working on that as well to get that payment out to you. But you're not done yet. What happens a few months later is you're going to get proofs in the mail. And what these are, sometimes you'll get a digital proof first, but you're definitely going to get like a printed proof. And what these are from the printer, usually printed on either a really high-end laser printer or an inkjet printer, what the book is going to look like in physical form printed. And these are usually larger. They're not cropped. They're not cut in. You could see all the like the registration marks on the edges and everything. And you look through it and make sure that the color that they're printing matches the color that you had on your screen. And if everything looks good, you can just tell the art director, you know, this is A-okay, or I have a few notes, like everything's leaning a little too blue. Can we up the reds on this? You know, that's a problem that I've had in the past.
Well, let me ask you guys a question with that specifically. I send in some comps, some color comps, or, you know, versions of my finished work, or even just sample swatches of what different colors should be when I'm sending a book for final print, because mm-hmm. if everybody's looking at screens, there's no definitive color mm-hmm. and everybody's kind of just trying to hit a moving target. And so at least when I send a couple of finished images in a hard copy, they can at least say, okay, here's what the artist is intending with this. Let's see how far off, you know, our version is. And that way they can start doing the corrections without me being there.
Mm, yeah.
What do you send in?
I just send a hard copy proof. If it's on semi-gloss paper, or I try to figure out what kind of paper they're going to use, whether it's going to be a coated stock or non-coated, you know, glossy or matte. And I try to match it as best I can. But worst case scenario, I just send something that just looks good. Something that I think is going to be, you know, where I would be happy if it printed like that. And say, here's what I'm intending. And that way, at least then if the book comes back and it looks terrible, they don't blame me.
Mm-hmm. Where do you get this print from.
I had my system color calibrated by a crazy color guy in Portland. All he does is color stuff. And so he'll take your monitor and your scanner and your printer and have them all talking to each other. So when I'm looking at something on screen, it matches what comes off. But if you don't have that, you can still get pretty close. Yeah. Go to a good printer. I mean, look up photography or you know, any kind of good printer in your local town, and they should be able to get something close. You can get, if you Google, I don't know what it's called, like that test sheet that has all the swatches and some people's, you know, skin tones and all that stuff, kind of a sample 8x10. There's a bunch of them online for free, and they're high resolution. Print one of those off of your printer, have it on your screen, and then have a good printer print that same file, and you can kind of see the fluctuations that are happening.
That's cool.
I don't do that. I've just relied on the printer to send back good proofs, and they always do. And I'm always impressed with what they send. So I saved all that money with the high-end print calibrator crazy guy.
Yeah.
And got lucky.
Bought a hot tub.
Hey, there you go. I get too nervous about it. I want to know that my screen is at least somewhat close to accurate, because it's, you know, I'm looking at this just secondary monitor I have, and it is so far off from my calibrated one that when I drag a file over there, I always get a little shocked and scared.
Also, your artwork, your illustration style lends itself more towards color. Like, the color in your work is doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Because you got these big, broad, you know, swaths, is that the word?
Swatch.
Swatches, whatever. You've got these swath, broad things of color.
Yeah.
Right. And whereas, like, Will does a lot of color, I do a lot of color, but our like my work is a little bit more linear, and the color I think takes a back seat to the drawing. And Will really renders shapes out a lot. So
are you calling me Mark Rothko?
I never said that. Those words did not come out of my mouth. No. All right. So after the proofs are approved, then you get the F and G's.
And would you call
I'm
me?
Not swearing.
Hey, can we get the joke, the sound effect?
Yeah. So you get the F and G's.
Would you call me? Oh, too soon. I got to do the.
So, okay. One more time. Here we go. So you get the F and G's.
Would you call me?
Okay. So dumb.
We just lost half our listeners right there.
I know. Come back. Wait. No, there's more. There's more real information.
We got a cowbell effect.
So it's F and G is short for folded and gathered. And what that is these are actual, not proofs, but sheets that have come off of the printing press, the actual printing press that's making the book. And this is what your book is going to look like. And this is where you can go in there and just double check everything. It's actually maybe a little too late to fix minor things, but if there is something major, this is a good chance to stop it before the presses run the entire books.
True story.
Yeah.
Geez. The first time I went to ALA, my publisher was sending me out there, and on the right at the end of the phone call, when we were dialing in all the details, she says, "Oh, and you can see those F and G's when you come out here." And I, over the phone, it just sounded I had no idea what she was talking about. I didn't know if she was mad about something. But when I get out there, I'll see something. And then I caught wind of someone else saying, you know, like when I got there, where's Will's F and G? And I was like, okay, so this is actually a thing.
Yeah. It threw me for a loop too. Nobody like sits you down when you go into illustration publishing school. And like, did your teachers ever run this through you?
No, they never. I mean, I had the same reaction Will did. I mean, I the only context I had for that kind of a phrase was like, where's my effing car when I'm looking for it to park?
Yeah.
Can't find it in the parking lot. And yeah, I mean, and all of a sudden people start throwing out this lingo. That still happens, by the way, when I'm visiting my publisher, and I mean, there's a lot of these little terms. It's like little snippets or what do you call it when it's just the letters that go in the anagram or
acronyms.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. So once the F and G's are approved,
you just like saying it.
The next thing you're probably going to get is advanced copies. And these are the finished book. You're going to get them before the book usually is published. So you get these advanced copies, but you're not the only one getting advanced copies. Librarians are getting these. Book reviewers are getting these. Publishers and agents and basically people who are like connected to this book somehow are going to have copies of this. The reason for that is specifically for the librarians and the book reviewers is, I should say librarians with some sort of book review audience to them, right? So there's some overlap there. But the reason for that is they're going to start reviewing the books and letting people know what people should think of these books, and give their thoughts on it. Some of the book reviewers are like Kirkus. What's the other one? Publishing Weekly. They're going to also review it. And what you're looking for at this stage is good reviews. Basically, people saying, you know, this is the next book. This is the book. A starred review on Kirkus is usually a good sign that they like it. Typical reviews. I won't reference a inside story that Lee told us, but typical reviews sound something like, you know, lyrical prose by this author who tells the story of this, and the writing is beautiful, and children will love this story with whimsical illustrations by so and so. They're a little bit heavy on the writing and not so much on the art, but you kind of take whatever you can get, I guess. Has that been your experience in book reviews as well? Well, Lee,
it has been, yeah. And they need to lean. I mean, let's be honest. The illustrations are everything. The writing barely matters. No, I'm just kidding.
Barely.
Right, Will Terry, if you don't agree with that.
But that's funny. Jake and I both know somebody who changed their career based on what would be looked at as a decent review, but was considered a bad review. So basically,
It wasn't a star review.
It wasn't a starred review, yeah. So if you don't get a starred review, as far as the librarians, as far as the influencers in the children's book world, the people that write about it for School Library Journal, it's a miss, and your book is most likely never going to be a commercial success if you do not get a quote-unquote starred review, not a five-star review. It's just called a starred review.
Yeah.
And it basically is a nod to all the children's book buyers in the early buyers, the librarians, that this is on our radar. We highly recommend this book. We're really proud of this book. Those reviewers that give that starred review are basically saying, yeah, this is one of the best books of the year. So this guy that we know who, you know, finally is his debut book. He had illustrated a few other books for other authors. And then he was, you know, I think he was on the radar with like Betsy Bird on her blog. It's a big children's book blog for School mm-hmm. Library Journal. And a few other big bloggers were saying, this is a great book. This is going to be, you know, keep your eye on this one coming out for whatever year it was, 2014 or something like that. And he didn't get the starred review. And they actually said something like, it'd be nice if the illustrations did this or that or something, you know, like which was, is a horrible review. It was like, this is a great book, blah, 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 blah. And it'd be neat if the illustrator would have done this or something like that. And it was like, this guy just decided, that's it. I'm done. I'm moving on.
Oh my gosh. Really? And he actually followed through with it. He quit.
And he's actually really successful in what he's doing now.
Smart man.
Yeah. He knew what he really was good at and what he wanted.
Yeah.
Well, to add the opposite side of that is that these reviewers, and I don't want to say they don't know what they're talking about because they do sometimes maybe, but a lot of times I'm digging a deep hole here. these people a lot of times they're just librarians or I mean they're not illustrators, I guess is what I'm trying to say. They don't have a huge background in art. They're not art directors, and so they're critiquing it based on, I mean, they like it or they don't like it. I'm not saying that their opinion is not valid, but it's not even a committee. It's just literally one person that gets to do this, and there's a whole group of people that these books get sent out to. It's kind of random. So what happens if my book gets sent to somebody who just loves Norman Rockwell, like, say, for example, that's the kind of art that they like this kind of nostalgic realism, and they get my book, man, I'm in trouble.
Right.
So changing your whole career based on it is kind of silly, right?
Not a good idea.
But then your book might get sent to someone who's way into like Jackson Pollock and some of these like abstract artists.
Rothko.
And they're just going to eat it up.
Look at these color fields, these color swatches floating around.
Theme first.
So moving on with our children's book life cycle, the book reviews start coming in, the release day happens. And
wait. Okay, sorry. I got to go back. There's one review that I got to highlight out of my career.
Okay.
That was it wasn't a bad review, but it was just, like Jake was saying, we get like six sentences of total, you know what I mean? That's with the writing and the illustrating extent. My reviewer spent two sentences, which is a ton of real estate in this context, mentioning that I drew a girl on one page riding a bike, not wearing a helmet.
Oh boy.
You believe that? They could talk about, I mean, this story is huge. Like the story that was, it was a very poignant story and it had a lot of emotion. And there was, this kid, it's a kind of a coming of age for this kid in different ways. And all this stuff, and they picked out that she wasn't wearing a helmet.
Well, Lee, you're a bad person. You're advocating.
I did come from kind of skateboarding and the X Games kind of side of things, so I don't care about helmets. That's what I say.
Lee doesn't care about children either.
Roll the dice, baby. Take off the helmets. No, I'm just kidding. That's not.
At some point, they're going to release like inflatable vests that like can protect like balls, inflatable balls that protect the child as soon as they're, the inertia of them is going over a certain speed.
If their heart rate goes up at all, it just inflates, no matter what the reason. Right.
There's actually a Black Mirror episode kind of about that. I don't know if you've seen any of those.
They're freaky. Anyways.
Yeah. Okay. So
sorry.
Let's see. So you totally lost my train of thought. Okay. Book reviews, the release day. All right. So your book comes out, big day. You're blogging about it. You're blogging. Who blogs? You're tweeting about it. You're Instagramming. You're sharing everybody. Get my book. The thing though, is you're also leading up to that. You're wanting people to pre-order your book because the more pre-orders that you get for this book, the more they're going to know if they're going to need to print more books, if this book's going to be a good seller. So there's some marketing that you've got to do as an author or an illustrator, one of the creators, but it definitely all comes to head on release day. And maybe that's also when your third advance payment comes, gets sent. I don't know if it comes through on that day, but usually a month from that day is maybe when you'll start seeing that check. Now, if you could swing it, or if your publisher could swing it, they might send you on a book tour, and this usually coincides with the release or the launch of your book, and it could be anywhere from one or two cities to 10, 20 cities.
Well, how many cities do you normally get sent to?
Probably 12.
Yeah, I'm more like a 20 city. Wait, no, Will, I'm joking with Will because I'm actually speaking for Will. I don't know. I've never been sent on a book tour ever.
I've never been sent on a book tour ever. I've been sent to ALA.
Yeah, they comped my dinner one time. Up to $15.
All right, we'll pass book tours. So moving on. I did go on a book tour.
Tell us about it, Jake.
What's your per diem daily, Will, on your book tour?
Oh, at least $1,000.
Oh, weak, man. Weak. Cheap.
Okay, whatever. It was basically, I'd go to a city. You guys are making me feel bad now. I'd go to a city, and someone would, a driver would pick me up from the airport.
Oh, wow. We've got a driver now. Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
It's Mr. Parker. Mr. Jake Parker.
Jake Parker.
Oh, my
gosh. Was there a bar? Was there snacks?
I'm actually breaking out in a sweat right now. A little bit. Okay,
Your driver picks you up. They take you to dinner first, or do they drop you off at the spa?
At the hotel. So you go to your hotel and you get to just unwind a little bit. But then at the cities that I went to, I should say this might be a once in a lifetime experience. This book tour thing. I sure enjoyed it.
Those with sour grapes can only hope.
Yeah, but basically, I would do a bookstore, and then one or two schools per city. And so during the day, you're going and you're giving a presentation to a school. Then they're shuttling you to the next school. You give a presentation, and you're signing books. And then that evening, you'll go to a bookstore and do a book signing as well. And so that's typically how book tour goes, and then you repeat that for each city that you go to, and sometimes it sells a lot of books and sometimes it doesn't.
Let's dive into that just for one second. All joking aside, how did they decide on sending you on a book tour for this one? Because a publishing company does, you know, I don't know about hundreds, but at least dozens of books every single quarter. Right. Why was this one?
So this particular book, I was the author and the illustrator for it. So that makes more sense because you don't have to fly two people around. You just fly the one person around. And they just had a lot of faith in my book and in me as a person to be able to sell the book. And I do okay in front of a crowd, and I can get people to show up to places. You saw how many people came to the Portland book thing. So, you know, just at the end of the day, I'm just like, gee whiz, they sure spent a lot on that book tour. No wonder, you know, I wonder if it was worth it on their end, but you know, I don't know what legacy book that publisher has that pays their rent in downtown New York, but, it's probably just a drop in the bucket for their, you know, entire.
I'm going to go out on a limb and bet that those book tours are almost never worth it unless they win big awards like Caldecott. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what isn't, I mean, I don't know if you guys heard that metric before, but you know, most publishers are just hoping for the one book that then pays for all the books that lose money.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. I think I was actually told by an editor, it's as much as 1 to 12. Most houses are like somewhere between 1 and 8 and 1 to 12. In other words, every 8th or up to 12th book is paying for all the others.
Hmm. Mm. Yeah. And if you're the publisher publishing To Kill a Mockingbird or Lord of the Flies, or I don't know, what's another book?
While Jake's struggling, I just want to throw a shout out to those artists and illustrators who have paid for all my books.
thank you everybody. No, but those books, The To Kill a Mockingbird and Lord of the Flies, are the ones that are, I mean, they're still selling hundreds of thousands, if not millions of copies a year.
If you look at in Publishers Weekly, like the Hungry Caterpillar, Eric Carle, It's still up there in the top little grouping. I mean, it's always in the top five.
He has Buy Your Own Island money.
Yep, he's there.
he owns an island. They're
perennial sellers. All right, so the book tour is over with. As you guys know, once that's done, the party's over, and it's time to go home. Or your book goes on to a bestseller list. And that is usually, you find that out either a week. Is it a week or 2 weeks after the book is published? I'm not sure. I think it might be 2 weeks, but you'll find out, if your book is on that New York Times bestseller list. And, isn't that just a great feeling when you get that email?
Wouldn't know.
You guys.
Here again, I'm going to be the guy in the room. I'll be that guy. Okay, I'll be the lowly serf in the podcast right now, who is proud of his career, and the cool thing is, you can have a career without having all those wonderful accolades like Mr. Parker likes to brag about. It's cool for him. But for me, it's cool just to be an illustrator, to wake up in the morning and go, yep, still an illustrator, and I can still get work, and you don't have to have all that stuff. So
I do the same thing, Will. It's just every morning I wake up and say, yep, still a New York Times bestselling illustrator.
You know, I was just talking to my driver the other day about this.
Jake, give him a ride home today.
Oh, man. I'm just kidding. But honestly, the two books that I've had that have been on the New York Times bestseller list.
Oh, not the three? I thought you had three.
It's hard to keep track.
I have had three on there. I just trumped Jake.
Okay. Ooh. But it's one of them definitely was because of the author I was paired with. It wasn't anything I did.
Still counts.
The other one, I think it was some publisher trickery. In how they sort of sold the books. But I don't want to get into too much details there. But basically, the New York Times bestseller list, some of these other bestseller lists are really easy to game, and you can sneak your way on there.
I heard about that. I read an article that somebody had done that with a self-published book somehow.
Mm-hmm. So are my publishers just not sneaky enough? Is that what it is?
Right. The thing, it sounds like it. The thing that I watch more closely than that, I don't even look at that list regularly, if not at all. But the thing that I look at all the time is the Amazon bestseller rank. And that's usually a really good metric to tell how your book is selling and how other books are selling. And if you're anywhere under 10,000th best-selling book on Amazon, then you're doing pretty good and you're selling a bunch of
copies. Okay, I can finally claim that.
Yes. So don't worry about New York Times, Will, Terry. Just worry about, what was your Bonaparte book at one point?
Well, it is it's a Halloween book, so it's seasonal, but mm-hmm. It did get into the 700s.
700. That's pretty awesome. Good.
David Hone has one. He's got this Christmas book that he did a number of years ago, probably, I don't know, 10 years ago. I'm just guessing. And it's this Christmas book, and it comes back every year, and it gets into the teens, I think. I mean, it's up there.
Oh my gosh.
And so like, he's been giving me these lectures on royalties all these years, and then one year you're talking about that, and I'm like, yeah, so how much, you know, he's talking about this Christmas book, and we start talking numbers, and his numbers are off the charts because of that. And so his relationship to royalties is a lot different than mine is.
Right. Well, and that's the thing I want to talk about next is royalties. So royalty checks and statements usually come out twice a year, and they report on them 6 months apart from each other. And then if your advance is paid out, then you'll also be receiving a check with your statement. And what that statement says is, you know, it really breaks it down into the minutiae. So it'll say, this is how many books were sold at book fairs. This is how many hardcovers were sold. This is how many softcovers were sold. This is how many were sold in Canada. is how many were sold. You know, if there was any overseas stuff, it'll break that down too. And then it'll show what you still owe to pay off your advance before you could start getting royalty checks, or what, you know, also what percentage you're getting, because you're getting a different percentage for a hardcover, for a softcover, for a book fair book. And then how many, you know, how many books total sold, and then whatever, if you did pay it off, then the check will just state exactly what the check was for. The money will stay, or the statement will state what the check is for. It's getting to the end of this podcast, Mike. My wires are getting crossed. So that is basically the royalty thing. I get royalties on a handful of books, but not all of them. Some of them are not even close to getting paid out, which is why I was grateful for a good advance. But some of them are close, and so, you know, it makes me think maybe I should do a little more to like push these books over the edge, like promote them a little bit better or something. And then lastly, your book either continues to stay in print or it doesn't. And this is where a book either has eternal life or death. There's good on both. So if the book goes out of print, you typically can retain all the rights to it, and you can go self-publish it if you want, or you can go find another publisher who might want to do it. But there could still be a life for that book after it goes out of print. If it doesn't go out of print, then you still sell books, and maybe someday you get a royalty check for it, or you continue to get royalty checks because the book is still selling. And that, I think, is the entire life cycle of a book. Did we leave anything out?
No, I think that's it. I mean, that's kind of what happens. It's interesting to see what happens when they're done. I mean, and sometimes they'll get remaindered, like Jake says, and they'll go on deep discount. And that's always, I always used to get mad at publishers when I would see my books all of a sudden go from $16.99 to $3 or something. But now I understand it after doing a Kickstarter and ending up with a bunch of books in my garage. At some point, they've got to get rid of these books. I mean, there's warehouses filled with them. I've had other books where all of a sudden I started getting all these emails one day that people were saying, "Hey, got your books. So glad to see your book." I mean, all over the world. And what had happened is Dolly Parton's, the country music singer, her reading program had just randomly picked one of my books. And she has this kind of literacy program.
Wait, is there Dolly Parton that's not a country music singer?
I don't know. I just had to preface it just in case people don't know Dolly Parton, the music singer. She's known for a couple of reasons.
I'm a big fan of Dolly Parton.
The auto mechanic? Don't get her confused with the hockey player, because this is way different. Anyway, like 20,000 books go out overnight because of this program. And so then I thought, oh my gosh, this is awesome. I'm going to get all these royalties. And so I run and look at my contract, and, you know, all of a sudden it goes, you know, I get to the paragraph that says what happens when it goes down to like a deep discount book club or some kind of charity thing like this. And it was like pennies, you know, it wasn't even close, but you never know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? So all these books went out in the world, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah. That's what's cool. I do like working with publishers, because they do a lot of work. They do a lot of heavy lifting, and I look at it as I get paid to illustrate, and I also get paid to, you know, so I'm illustrating something that I get to add to my portfolio, but I'm also getting paid to basically have advertising for me as an illustrator. So, you know, if they print 10,000, 20,000 books, and sell those, there's 10 to 20,000 people who now have my artwork in their home who didn't before, you know.
Hey, let me ask you guys a question. Big advance,
dark involved.
Big advance or big royalty, which do you pick?
Big advance.
Yeah. You have to go with the safe money, because you're still going to get the royalty.
Do you think there's any risk with that?
Yes. However, and I think you, now I'm trying to think that you asked this so that you could one up us. So I'm going to jump to it before you do.
Do it.
And that is, if your sales record follows you, So if you are a big advanced person and you don't come close to earning out, when you get taken into an acquisitions meeting, all those sales figures come up and it could kibosh your future projects.
I wasn't actually thinking about that, but that's a good point.
And I know people that's happened to.
Yeah. Your sales record does follow you around. If you have a big flop, then, yeah.
Because they have to, and you have to think of it from their standpoint. When they go into those meetings, there are the good thing for the publisher is they're the bean counters that come into those meetings who don't know you, who didn't pick you, who've never worked with you, and who are there to, and I've been told this by editors, it's their job to make a case for why they shouldn't publish your book. And so that's their job is to come in there and say nay, you know. And it's the job of the editor to go, but this person is amazing, and here's why I think we will sell a bunch. And then they lay out the naysayer lays out those rotten sales stats from before, and sometimes your book was up, you know, your manuscript was up for acquisition, and you never hear about it, and it never gets bought, and that's the reason is because your last one was a flop. So safety wise, you're probably better off getting low advances. Although you can't always control that because they basically just offer you something. And I've heard of these crazy, huge advances, especially in, this isn't going to affect us as much, but like young adult literature. If they see a manuscript that they think they can turn into a franchise and movies down the road and stuff, these publishers will get into a bidding war over it. And these first-time authors will sometimes get a six-figure deal.
Yep.
You know? And yep.
Oh, man.
If they don't pay it back, then they're kind of in and out.
Well, the one thing I was going to add to that, I guess, is if you are early in your career and a company doesn't have a lot of money for advance, you can kind of balance it out on the other end by saying, okay, if you can't come up to what I need in advance, maybe we can work out a bigger royalty. So there's a balance there, I guess, that needs to be thought about.
Yeah. I mean, you could even just say, I don't need an advance. I'll just take royalties, and then you're really on the hook for how well that book sells.
True.
Can you do that? Like, I don't see why you couldn't, but do you know anybody who's ever done that?
I don't.
God, that would be so risky. But if you didn't need any money, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Jake could do that now.
You know, one thing that we did talk about.
I don't think so.
One thing that we haven't talked about is how school visits fits into this whole thing. And I don't want to, I know that we're kind of wrapping, but like, I'll just give you an example really quick. One of my authors, Jerry Pallotta, his publishers just keep feeding him or keep buying his books. And I've been told, and I want to be very clear, like, his books could be as good as the reviews. His books could be awesome. His success could be the same whether he did school visits or not. But I have been told that the fact that he does school visits every week, he's one of those guys that's in the schools from the, you know, he's planning next year's school visits this year. He flies out to different cities all over the country and all over the world. And he's, the librarians love him. He's super fun in school visits. And he sells a ton of books on every school visit. That factors in huge to whether or not they're going to buy his books, is what I've been told.
Hmm.
I don't want to say it like, well, the only reason they buy his books is because he does school visits, but it doesn't hurt. And I'll bet you could talk about that too, you know.
That's an episode in and of itself. We should do a school visit episode. That'd be fun. All right, everybody. You guys ready to wrap this up? 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. We didn't really slip it in there at all, the okay, SVS Learn.
It's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, do check out svslearn.com. There's a deal going on right now, I think, where you can get 6 days or a week for free to try it out. Anyways, whatever. Your hosts have been Will Terry. You can find him at willterry.com. Instagram account is at willterryart. Lee White, he can be found at leewhiteillustration.com. Instagram account is leewhiteillo. And I'm Jake Parker. You can find find me, my work at mrjakeparker.com and follow me on Instagram at Jake Parker. Podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. Go to his website, alexsugg.com, and see what he's working on over there. Cool stuff. Show notes and show illustration, which is posted on the svslearn.com podcast page. Those are done by Tanner Garlick, and his artwork is found at tannergarlickart.com. If you like this episode, please share it around. If you don't like this episode, please share it around as well. Subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you like to subscribe for podcasts. And please leave a review. We'd love to hear what you think about it. We do read them. We love seeing getting that feedback from you guys. If you want to join in on this particular discussion, log on to svslearn.com forums. They're free to join. And we've posted this episode in its own thread. Chime in over there and let us know your thoughts. Let us know if you have any questions about the life cycle of a children's book. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next time.